Hey y'all, this is Sam, and this is Crimology. This is episode 151. Before we jump into this, make sure you do all of the things, Instagram, Facebook, they're both at Crimology Pod. Specifically for this week, we post obviously different pictures of the case, but specifically for this week, there's a website that has crime scene photos. Pretty much 9 times out of 10, if I post any kind of crime scene photos on Instagram, it gets flagged. So I will just post like a link to those pictures instead. So this case is one of those cases where there's a lot of crime scene photos available to us. And so instead of posting those crime scene photos, even if there's nothing in it, a lot of times they just get flagged anyways for like safety precautions. So this is one of those cases where I'll be posting a link to those crime scene photos. Obviously, I also post links to the articles that I read that help me write this episode and different things like that. But both of those are posted on Instagram and on Facebook. And then we've got our email, crimologypod@gmail.com. Send us any kind of stuff over there. And then make sure to like, subscribe, share, 5 stars, do all of those things. So we're going to jump right in because this is a 6-pager, so it's a pretty long one. So let's get into it. This is episode 151, The West Memphis 3. This week's state is Arkansas. So some fun facts about this state. Their state bird is the mockingbird. And then Arkansas produces half of the rice found in the United States. Their state nut is the pecan. And then their state drink is milk, which is disturbing. And then their nickname is the Natural State. This is also another state where we haven't covered the top case from this state yet. So that's what I found on the website that I use. So if you're from Arkansas and you're like, I've never heard of this case, then maybe, you know, blame this article that I used. But all of the, all of the stories on that website that I found, we had never covered any of them before. So this is the one that said it was the most popular in Arkansas. So this week we're talking about 3 teenagers that were charged and tried for the murders of 3 8-year-old boys who might have not actually committed the crimes. So on May 6th, 1993, 3 bodies were found in a ditch in the middle of the woods. These bodies belong to Chris Byers, Stevie Branch, and Michael Moore, and they were all 8 years old. Their bodies had been found less than 24 hours after their families reported them as missing. The boys were naked, beaten, brutally mutilated, and they were all hogtied. Chris had also been castrated. Now at the crime scene, police weren't able to get a lot of evidence to help them. They were able to figure out that the boys weren't killed in the woods because there was no blood found anywhere. They also noticed that the area around where the boys were found looked like it had been cleaned, so any evidence that might have been left over had been picked up by whoever dumped the bodies. So there wasn't a lot of evidence to work with from the very beginning of this case. And so describing the crime scene, when I hear ditch, I think of like off the side of the road to like the culvert, but this is basically what it looks like is like a dried up creek bed. It's a pretty deep ditch. And when I say it's in the middle of the woods, like it's not even like off of this trail or walking off, you know, off of this road, it's literally in the middle of this wood. There's trees everywhere. There's leaves everywhere. And so it's just definitely like the crime scene looked too perfect, like about a couple of feet in circumference of this area. Everything just looked too neat and tidy for the woods, because then it was like a few feet away from the ditch and then it looked like woods, if that makes any sense. Like it looked like the area had been like raked. So any footprints that may have been left behind, they made sure to like rake the whole area to make sure that there was nothing like that left over. And it was almost kind of like they were raking up the leaves around the area because they were like, you know, we can't tell if we may have dropped something. So let's kind of just rake this area and put it all in a trash bag and like throw it away. So that's just also the thing that was noticed at the crime scene. But obviously, there's no blood anywhere, so they had known that the boys were killed and that they had remained somewhere else for a very long time before they were transported over here. Now, for some reason, the possibility of this being a satanic ritual was the first conclusion most of the people in the community thought of when the bodies were found. Their reasoning was because of the fact that the bodies were found in the middle of the woods, the way the bodies were positioned when they were found, and the fact that Chris had been castrated. Now, I tried to look at how the bodies were positioned, but I couldn't find anything. All of the articles mention, like, they say that sentence where they're like, people thought it was satanic because of the way the bodies were found, but they didn't go into detail about how the bodies were found. So I have no idea. So I don't know why they immediately went to that. I don't know. Now, most of the time, and for whatever reason, this theory overshadowed pretty much any other theory that people may have been throwing out there at the time. So the first suspect we're going to talk about is Damian Eklos, who was 18 years old when this crime happened. Now, Damian had been arrested earlier for burglary and sexual misconduct a few years ago, and he was assigned a probation officer until Damian turned 18. Now, Damian's probation officer said that he didn't believe there was a satanic cult in the area until he was assigned to work with Damian. Damian always denied being involved in a cult, but he did say that he practiced magic. Now, the reasons behind people thought that Damian was in a cult was because of the way he dressed, the music he played, and just his overall demeanor. Now, these seem wild to us, like, right? Like, how do you think someone is in a satanic cult just because of the way they dress? But let's look at a little bit of what's going on in the world around this time. So, serial killer Richard Ramirez had just been caught. He had left an AC/DC hat at one of the crime scenes. Heavy metal music was putting out music that were lyrics that were pretty questionable, that were either talking about the devil or they're talking about sacrifices or just like blood. And so it was kind of like a weird time for people who didn't listen to those kind of music. And there were multiple killings happening around the world, and all of the killers were saying that the reason was because the devil told them to. Another big case that happened right before these bodies were found was the McMartin preschool trial. Now, I had just heard about this case from this case, so we'll have to go back and cover it later. But basically, it was a preschool that the McMartin family had, and they were all charged with hundreds of sexual abuse charges against their kids. And if I'm understanding correctly, because I didn't really do a big deep dive, was that when the kids were questioned about what happened to them, they all mentioned satanic rituals happening. And so this pretty much just added to the story. And so this case ended up having the longest and most expensive series of criminal trials in American history. So everyone was talking about it. And then the years following this, it felt like the idea of witches and satanic rituals were everywhere. So this is basically how Damian's name gets involved with this case. Now, the second suspect is Jason Baldwin, who was 16 when the murders happened. Now, both Jason and Damian were outcasts in school. The two boys were really close friends, but they didn't have a lot in common. Jason didn't practice magic like Damian did, and they really had a lot of different views on things, but somehow their friendship just worked, even with having nothing in common other than not having any other friends. So Jason was brought into the equation just purely because of his friendship with Damian. And then the last suspect we have is 16-year-old Jesse Miss Kelly. Jesse had no connection with Jason or Damian. Jesse was brought into this equation by the woman who he babysat for named Vicky. Now, Vicky was brought into the police station for a completely separate issue. She was going to have a polygraph test done to see if she was stealing money from her work, and she brought her son Aaron with her. And Aaron was around the same age of the boys that were murdered. So a police officer is just having a conversation with Aaron while his mom is getting the test done. And then Aaron tells police that the boys were killed at a playroom. When Aaron is questioned further, he said he witnessed the crimes himself and said that Satan worshipers committed the crimes. He gave police a location for the playroom, but when police checked, there was nothing there. When Aaron was asked to pick people out of a lineup for who he saw killed these boys, he didn't pick Damien, Jesse, or Jason. So after all of this happened with Vicky's kid, she's just trying to get her kid out of the equation. So she offers to help police. She tells police about her babysitter, Jesse, and how he's around the same age as Damien. So she says, I can have Jesse introduce me to Damien, and I can act like I'm interested in Satan worship and see if I can get some insider information. So Vicky said she convinced Damien to bring her to one of his witches' meetings, and she said that Jesse went with them. So this is how Jesse becomes involved. Now that police had Vicky saying that Jesse was also involved in Satan worship, he was brought in for questioning. Jesse would end up being interrogated for hours by police. And in the end, Jesse would end up admitting to killing the three boys, and he would say that Jason and Damien helped him, and that it was all a satanic ritual. Now, Jesse's confession would be recorded, and in the video, Jason would end up contradicting himself multiple times. He was needing to have police remind him of what happened. Some of the details that Jesse gave wouldn't even match the crime scene or what officials had on record. But even with all of these holes in Jesse's quote confession, all three boys were arrested on June 3rd, 1993. Now, immediately after his arrest, Jesse retracts his confession. He said that police made him confused by the whole situation and made him feel like he needed to admit to things that he didn't actually do just so he could go home. But even after Jesse said all of this, all boys remained in custody. And we've seen this happen before in the Central Park Five. Now let's talk about other things police didn't handle very well in this case. Police find out that that one of the victims' dads gave away a knife the day after the murder. So this is Chris's stepdad, just kind of gives this knife away. And then when the person who is given the knife learns of Chris's death, kind of goes to police and says, hey, just letting you know, I got this knife. And then when the knife was brought to police, there was evidence of blood, both from Chris and from Chris's stepdad. But police didn't look into this any more than that. Also, the night the boys went missing, a restaurant in town called police to report a man who came in to use their bathroom, and he is covered in blood and mud. When police stopped by the restaurant, they got samples of the blood that the man left behind in the bathroom, but they never tested the blood with any DNA linked to this case. And in the end, officials would say that these samples were lost when the trial was going on. So now we go to trial. Because they have a confession from Jesse, he is tried separately from Damien and Jason's. They even wanted Jesse to testify against the other boys, but Jesse refused. And when he was asked any questions about his confession, he refused to repeat anything that he said in his confession because he stood by that everything was false and that he was led to say those things and that he would never confess to any of this ever again. Now, like we said earlier, this wasn't a lot of evidence in the case, which means there isn't a lot to help the boys in this case. All of the evidence in these trials were circumstantial. They had a cult expert come in to testify that the boys' music collections and clothing were key indicators of satanic cult activity. Now, the hardest part was the boys' team was that they had a hard time proving that the boys didn't commit the crimes. So basically what they're having to do is, it wasn't these boys, it was this person. And because they didn't have that person to point fingers to, that was what the boys' teams understood, is that this was going to be the hardest part, was convincing people that you didn't do it. But in the end, both juries from both trials found the boys guilty of murder. James was sentenced to life in prison. Jesse was sentenced to life in prison plus 40 years. And then Damien was sentenced to death. Now, years after the trials, I'm talking decades after, Vicky would come forward and say that everything she said was a lie, that none of it happened, that she was just trying to help her son, and that police told her everything that she needed to say. Then we have the foreman of one of the juries was also accused of misconduct when it was discovered that he had been talking to his attorney about the case every single day. There was also new DNA evidence linked to the case. DNA was tested that was found at the crime scene that matched another victim's stepdad. So there was DNA that was found that now matched Stevie's stepdad. And so now you've got Stevie's stepdad's, that DNA is found at the crime scene. And then you've got Chris's stepdad, who gave away this knife right after the murders, and that there's Chris's blood and his blood on it. Remember that. So with all of this happening, the boys were granted a new hearing. The boys are now in their 30s. So as everyone is working on a strategy, the boys' lawyers come to them and they say they think the only thing they can do is accept an Alford plea. What this is it's a guilty plea. The boys are saying they are holding on to their innocence, but they are also admitting that the circumstantial evidence against them is stacked. And they know that if this is brought to another trial, that they would be found guilty again. So what they're asking is to enter this plea deal, and they're asking for their time served to be the sentence. So the boys are hesitant, right? Because it's still a guilty plea and they don't want to admit to something that they didn't do. But they also know that even though there is more evidence now, that this evidence doesn't point to someone else who had a recorded confession. And with Damien's execution date coming up fast, the boys decided to work together to get out. So on August 19th, 2011, the plea was accepted and the boys are released from prison with time served. In the end, the boys served 6,404 days in prison. They were charged on February 5th, 1994, and they were released in 2011. They spent over 17 years in prison. Damien was 18 when he was charged, and he was 35 when he was released. James was 16 when he was charged, and 33 when he was released. And then Jesse was 17 when he was charged and 34 when he was released. Here we are years later, and this case still hasn't been solved and may never be solved because of the way officers handled this case. It had been said that prosecutors will not continue to investigate these boys' murders. Jesse, James, and Damien will never receive compensation for their time spent in prison. Now, obviously, from 1994 to 2011, life changed a lot for these boys when they got out. They joked and said that the video games they had when they were kids were nothing to now the computer iPhone they have in just in their pockets. So life adjusting for them was really hard. The boys have expressed that they are constantly worried about Jesse specifically because there is still a recorded confession of him out there. And even though prosecutors have said that there will be no investigation into these boys' murders, all three of these boys wake up every day constantly worried that just one day officers will knock on Jesse's door and bring him back in for these crimes, and that his case will go to trial again, and that he'll end up still spending the rest of his life in prison. But as of now, that hasn't happened, and prosecutors have, I mean, I'm not saying they stuck to their word, but they have said that this wasn't being investigated, and so far that's been true. So they have been out of prison since 2011, but having served 17 years. So this is, like I said, we did Central Park 5 fairly early in our crimeology life. And so that's the only other case. Yeah, I'm sure there's hundreds of them. But that's the only case that I can remember that we've covered that's like this, of people being accused of something that they never did, and specifically police coming in and just interrogating somebody for hours, to the point that they admit to something that they just never did. So I'm surprised that we've never covered a case from Arkansas. So it was nice to, I mean, we talked about the McMartin family, and so that's definitely a case that I'm going to be adding to my list to go back and look at. So we got a whole list of cases from this state since looking into it and finding all of these different cases. So that was nice. But yeah, this is episode 151, a long one. This was a 6-pager. So yeah, next week, I think the state is I think it's Colorado. I was going to say Connecticut, but I think it's Colorado. So Colorado, stick around. That's next week. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening and supporting and continuing just to come back and listen. Make sure, again, do all the things. Instagram, Facebook, 5 stars, review, share, subscribe, do all of those things. Thank you guys for letting me talk your ears off for 20 minutes. So yeah, like always, this is Sam, and this is Crimology.